This week on RSVNB Update, combat pets in their early reception, a postmortem on Dimension of the Damned, analyzing what makes a 2018 Premier Club worthwhile, a look at upcoming content, and obscure drop rates including the fabled Draconic Visage. This is RSVNB Update, episode 647, recorded Friday, November 24th, 2017. Combat pets and obscure drop rates. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSVNB Update. Last episode of November here, technically. We had some interesting stuff happen this past weekend, and well, we're gonna recap some of that and recap it for the last time this year, and we'll see if it comes back next year. You guys probably know what I'm talking about by this time, but if you don't, that is Dimension of the Damned, the finale that was last weekend. We have reconvened the panel from the Dimension of the Damned episodes. That is Tycho and Tanis. Welcome back, both of you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you. I mean, I remember you telling me that I wouldn't be here for a long, long time, and yet I'm here, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't think I said that, but okay.
So, it's recorded.
So Dimension of the Damned, we'll talk about that in just a little bit, but let's just say for you guys that the sense I'm getting is that it wasn't an optimal experience. Yes?
Very, very, very nice way of putting that. Okay. Shane. No, it was not. It was kind of like, you know, I don't have anything nice to say about it, so why don't you talk about it a little bit, Tycho?
How deep do I actually want to get into
just
that?
A little scratch, because we have other stuff to talk about before we get there.
Well, give a summary, nothing really went as planned. And even though Jagex gave us so much time, it was chaos, basically. And if there was one person who actually enjoyed it, it was Mod Raven during the live stream.
Oh, of course he would enjoy it.
Yeah, he was laughing at all those deaths. I mean, I never heard him laugh so much.
You know, it sounds like from that Mod Raven and I would be really good friends, because we both tend to enjoy that kind of humor. Watching other people die, watching other people's misfortune, that kind of thing. But anyways, we'll get to a bit of a Dimension of the Damned later, but first, the combat pets are out for the various combat skills for attack, strength, range, magic, defense, constitution, prayer, and summoning. These are, of course, the ones that were voted on by the players in the polls this past summer. We have Sifu for attack, which is the blind eastern dragon, Kangali, which is a kangaroo with boxing gloves for strength. That's rather interesting. Sparky for ranged, which is an injured crossbow wielding squirrel, which I guess kind of takes its name from that that bar near Ardoyan with another injured squirrel.
Yeah, poison arrow pub.
There you go. Magic is Newton, a wizard had a newt holding an orb of shifting magical energies. Wallace for defense, which is a cowardly Grenwell armed with a helmet and shield. Morty for defense, a hardy Axolotl with a transparent body. Ghostly for prayer, which is basically just a ghost. And Shimani for summoning, which is a creature trapped within the veil between life and death. These pets are out. There's not much to say about them. Kind of goes the same way all the other skill pets went. I made people a bet that before the podcast I would get the magic pet from the farming runs I do, because I use a couple of magic teleports in those farming runs, but I did not get the magic pet from doing that.
But that's proof that it's balanced then.
Yeah, because I have got 7 other skill pets so far, so it wants to give it to other people at this time.
Yeah, Shane is very lucky with the pets. All I know is, like, I'm sure PETA has to be really pissed. I mean, They're writing emails somewhere. They're angry, just looking mad at all the pets here. I've been trying to get the attack pet, though, because a blind dragon is just awesome. So I have to have it.
Yeah.
And I've been working this week to get it, but haven't gotten it yet. Might have to do some drastic measures if I don't get it this week and go to, well, might just have to hang out and do some camping up there in the Sarah encampment and just go to town like that. I've been trying to do it through Slayer, but
yeah, it's kind of hard if you need to change combat types there and there. So they also added three new. Sorry, Tycho, go ahead.
Okay. I haven't received one, but I was very surprised about how many people received them upon logging in. I mean, I thought they were rare, but suddenly I see a lot of people go around with them.
Yeah. Yeah. They added three new titles, Jack of Blades, Jack of All Blades, and the Illustrious Master of All title for anyone who gets all 27 of the pets, and the names of the first players to win the new titles will be broadcast in-game live. So, there's that. Also, just some stats here from this week's stream. They started off the stream covering skill pets and combat pets in general. As of the 20th of November when the stream happened, there are 480 constitution pets in game, 283 summoning, 138 magic, 110 ranged, 107 defense, 91 prayer, 75 strength, and 57 attack pets. And if you look at the graphs here, they started off with summoning being the most rewarded one, but that was slowly overtaken by constitution by a huge margin. And, you know, I think that makes sense because you get constitution XP anytime you do combat, so it is bound to be more common than those, right?
Yes. Yeah, and that's something to keep in mind too, that combat is much, much faster experience, and it's something that a lot more people are into rather than hardcore skilling. So I think that's reflected in the numbers of the pets we see this week.
And you can also get the magic pet by doing non-combat magic. Mm-hmm. So that's why
that's true.
That's why magic is on top of all the other ones, and the rest are kind of clustered. Interesting that prayer is ahead of attack and strength, though.
I mean, bone crusher. I mean, many have bone crusher in their inventory.
Okay.
But I'm still surprised it's not. Actually, it does make sense that it's just below defense because it doesn't give as much XP.
But based on per action, though.
Yeah.
Oh.
So every mob you kill, you're getting a chance at it. So that makes sense.
Plus, if you use a POH altar or the Ectofunctus or even cleanse the Hethen crystals, you do have a chance of getting this pet. So that's why it's a little odd that prayer's not a bit higher. But So
that's probably because it can be costly to train in the long run. True. Compared to range and defense.
Take it from me. It is.
So, Tanis, you're going for the attack pet?
Yeah.
Tycho, which one would you go for if you had to pick one?
Defense, because I'm currently going for 200 million defense. And it's
nice.
Wow. It was my first combat. No, it wasn't my first combat skill I got in 1999. It was prayer. But defense, I mean, I go for defensive stats before offensive, something PVMers have been screaming to me that don't do that, dude. Go for power armor. Why do you go around with your entire 85 Death Lotus armor?
That's okay. I like tank armor too.
The funny thing about it, we had a DPS competition, and I came in second place with Death Lotus armor, proving that the number one thing that's better than power armor, it's ability rotation.
And who were you competing against? I must know.
I mean, we were doing next Angel of Death. So as a fun thing, we put up a challenge crystal that measured our damage against next. And I were one of the DPSers. And of course, the tank barely did anything. So I guess it was 7 instead of 8 during the competition. But Yeah, so this was professionals.
Wow. Yeah, good on you, man.
And I assume these were ClanQuest folk.
Oh, actually not. I mean, most ClanQuest folks don't go to Angel of Death.
True. All right. One final thing before we move on from pets. They did also talk about the current skill pets in-game, and I figure we could just give a little bit of an update on those. Fishing is still the most popular. There are 62,000 fishing pets in-game, 47,000 mining pets, 46,000 divination pets and woodcutting pets, and 41,000 slayer pets. And surprisingly, the sixth most popular pet is brains from farming. That's 36.7K.
Must be all those herb runs.
Yeah, I thought that would be higher, but no. The three rarest pets are construction at 7.9K, hunter at 11.3K, and runecrafting at 15K. And I got runecrafting.
Yeah, I know, but you're extremely lucky. you're really lucky, dude. Yeah, all of those pets are very rare, and they're hard to get. I've known people that's had trouble with every single one of those.
So. And please note that a lot of those people who have acquired Rue, the runecrafting pets, are doing runecrafting just to get the pets because Rue is the most gorgeous, cute little dragon thingy.
Bless their hearts for doing the skill just for the pets. Just for the pets. So.
Fashionscape.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and, you know, always interesting to pull these numbers up. And another thing that came from this is that there were people inside of the first day. I think it was a handful of people who got three or four of these combat pets on the first day.
Yeah, I think it was five people who got four combat pets, if I remember right from the stream.
Yeah, five people.
So you had a bunch of Shanes running around, only they like
combat. That is beyond Shane luck, believe me.
That's beyond Shane luck.
Also, fortune. Only 415 people got the Jack of All Trades pet, which was the title for unlocking all 19 skilling pets. Only 415 have done all of that. So
only, but it's still, in a way, a lot.
Because you're going to hit, in that 19, you're going to hit one that you're going to put in 50, 60 mil, maybe more. And
yeah, I think that's got to be there. Because, you know, it just goes with randomness that you're going to have that kind of a curve. You're going to get some really early and you're going to get some really soon. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So unless they made it all back through farming runs, then it's a loss getting their pets.
Yeah.
In economy.
Yeah. All right. Anything else on pets here before we move on beyond skill pets? No? Yes, no.
Fashionscape is complex, but pets are cute.
And that seems to be what most people go for, because we'll talk about it in the content showcase. Lots of Fashionscape items coming this December.
Oh, yeah. That's the real end game. That's what we really do.
Yeah, you know, that's becoming exactly like Star Trek Online. You know, you've,
really?
you've unlocked everything. You've done everything. The next most interesting thing is to find your most favorite ship and make it look the way you want, to make your character look the way you want. You know, so
we must add a feature where we can wear multiple clothes at the same time.
Well, we have that. You just change outfits in the customization interface.
No, but there are backpacks you can have, but I can't have it with a cape at the same time.
Oh, of course. Okay, I see what you mean. Yeah, that's hard, though. Very hard.
Nah, yeah. I mean, some glitching problems probably, but just put it in there, Fashionscape.
All right. Well, speaking of other things you can get from Fashionscape, the details for the 2018 Premier Club have been announced. I'll just go with the pricing here first, just to give a bit of an idea. It comes in the standard three tiers that you can get Premier Club for, bronze, silver, and gold, for 5, 10, or 20 bonds, respectively. The prices are as follows. I will just read out the prices of the Gold Premier Club, because I think that's what everyone's going to be interested in, largely. So, $49.99 Great British Pounds, or $79.49 US dollars, or 71 euros for the Gold Premier Club. Now, if you're doing the math at $79.49 and you have a brand new RS account who has just come into game, and normally you pay $9.99 a month, if you go $79.49 and you divide that by 12 for 12 months, you are paying only $6.62 this year per month for membership with the Premier Club, if you don't already have a decent membership price. So unless you are at the lowest of lowest grandfathered in rates, Premier Club is an automatic buy for you this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you're at the $7.99, $9.99, or even $6, or I think there was a $6.99 grandfathered price point for RS, but I don't think it lasted for that long. If you're at any of those grandfathered price points, this is definitely worth it for you. Now, I know there's lots of questions about how valuable Premier Club is. Here's some other ways of looking at it. If you look at the 450 key package price, that is the exact same price as the Premier Club, $79. And you get an extra key per day. So you're basically getting an extra 365 keys here for that same price. So if you factor in the double keys of it with your membership, so two of them, you're basically getting 600 plus keys for the same price as you would pay for 450 keys if you were just buying Treasure Hunter keys on their own. So there's one way of looking at it. You also get 150,000 bonus loyalty points, but I don't know anyone who doesn't have these coming out of their ears at this point.
I don't, because I buy auras a lot.
Yeah.
As many as possible.
Okay. So this might be worthwhile then.
Yeah.
Yes. Premier Club also gets 50% off discount with Rune Metrics again this year.
That's nice.
Yeah. They're also bringing out the Premier Club reward tokens. You get one if you purchase a silver tier, one if you purchase the gold tier, and also if you purchase the gold tier, you get one when you purchase it right off the bat. You get one on January 1st, and you get one on July 1st. And what these tokens can do is that they can be used to unlock cosmetic items from years past. So if you buy the Gold Premier Club in December, you can pick three former Premier Club items that you may not have gotten. So for example, for me, I would choose the I would probably choose the Retro Teleport. I would also probably choose, I don't know, maybe the Retro Swords from 2015 as well, and maybe the Crystal Peacock outfit from last year. So basically this is a way of catching up if you have been skipping out on Premier Club over the previous years, which if you look at this would be a really good thing for me, because I just got Premier Club in 2013 and I skipped 14, 15, and 16. So I would basically be able to choose one reward from each of those years that I missed if I purchased Premier Club this year. So once again, if Fashionscape is your thing and you want to get some of these old rewards, this is the way to do it.
And you get to choose.
Yeah, you get to choose any of them.
And even more, this removes the stress on Jagex on they must create the next unique thing for the next year's Premier Club. I mean, here you can choose something, and then with time, Jagex will release new outfits or content for Premier Clubs, and people can choose their favorite.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, for me, it seems like this might be a year to do it for an extra $19 on top of what I normally pay for this. So what are you guys thinking?
Well, is there any other goodies? Is there just the cosmetic things like that? I mean,
I know we have the ball, aura. Right?
Okay, so what's the aura do?
The Hellion Aura boosts your XP by plus 10% for 1 hour when it's activated. It also gives both you and those around you an additional 10% XP boost for the first 10 minutes and allows for one free death reclaim.
Actually, there's been
And this resets once a
conflicting.
day.
Yeah, and that one daily aura cooldown refresh. About the death, I heard one free death reclaim and I heard 1 hour. So I heard both types. I'm going with free death reclaim for 1 hour because that's what I heard on stream. So it's basically like the Pantheon aura that you get to choose between these four effects.
Well, see, the aura doesn't sound like as good as they have been in the past, but I did go into the vault, and that seemed pretty
Yeah, the
sweet.
Premier Club Vault. That's a weekly thing, if I recall.
A monthly.
Okay, monthly, sorry.
Still, it's pretty
You
nice.
know, I think you can get what did we get in there? I just got XP items. What did you guys get?
I got some Silverhawks, springs, and prismatic stars, quite a few of them.
Okay,
I
so
got a
basically.
lot of large lamps and XP stars. I mean, I think I got like 14 items that were only XP related.
Wow, you're fast, or you have a really super fast
I
connection.
am very, very fast, believe me. If I have been ad I haven't been adventuring for 10 years without learning how to move from point A to point B in the fastest possible way.
You
So
surge
yeah.
in between chests and everything. Come on.
Actually, I tried surging, escaping, bodging, and bladed diving in there, but they have blocked it, so they didn't. No, I
Oh
can't do
my
it.
God. You've
So
got
I actually prioritized and got the exact timing right by counting the seconds in my head, how much time it takes to unlock a chest, and by that time I'll ha already ha right-clicked and another chest, and already running away while collecting my rewards on the run. And then I just check where the chests are grouped. I mean, if you see a cluster of chests, you chose the closest one, and then it I figured, okay, the bigger chest takes bigger time, so I will have to focus on those that are close to me instead of size, and so on.
Well, it actually, see that this actually sounds good enough to get me to do it this year, because it's actually enough of a savings, especially for my alt. The trouble with Premier Club is always the timing of it for me, because it's Christmas time.
Yeah,
It's that
yeah.
time when things are a little bit tighter. So
But
yeah, that's the problem. But
what you can do is that you buy bronze, and then later during the year you upgrade it to silver and
you
gold.
can do
The
that?
only, yeah, I could do that last year. I bought bronze, and then later with bronze I could upgrade to silver. Only downside is that you won't get the rewards from the start, and these bonus loyalty points won't be upgraded, so to say. But you can get it.
Well, it's an option anyway, if you're.
So if you buy silver, you can 6 months later go for gold.
See. I don't know. This might be. I might try to figure something out this time, at least for one of the accounts, if
The
not both.
$27.99 price for 3 months is a really good value. That's $5.59 for membership. That's really
See, that's
cheap.
what I. And that's
That's
what I
really
do
cheap.
for the alt.
And that's you know, and that's only 5 bonds too. So there's another option.
Well,
Yes.
and 5 bonds are easy enough to get within that 3 months, and they're easy enough to get just by doing really minimal work, like do your daily wax and feather runs and
Feather
broadheads, feathers. Yeah.
from
Believe it or not, the shops. I have a
real
whole route.
shops.
Yeah, I have a whole route, believe it or not. But it works.
I have a feeling I'm missing out on some money making potential here.
Hey, we'll
Are
have to
you
get together. I'll show you how you do piddles. That's what.
buying runes from magic shops?
Yep, of course.
Of course. Good. And by the way,
Tannis,
Shane, have you
don't continue. Don't consider this an order. And I think you'll have better things to talk about in December. But I think an informer article on this subject would be warranted. Not necessarily for December, because I'm sure there's lots of stuff we're going to want to talk about in December.
We have a big, we have a hell of a year to recap, right?
That's right.
Wow.
So, Shane,
yeah,
have you noticed that those using yellow are the losers in this year's Premier Club?
No, I haven't. Why is that?
Because if I'm quoting Sirion on this, the pound and the euro is exchanged at almost 1-to-1 rate. And if you look at the prices, it's around 16 pounds, but
1.112 is the current rate right now. One British pound gets you 1.12. So if we take 49.99 and multiply that by 1.12, yeah, you're right. The euros are a bit more.
So why is that? Can we blame Brexit for it?
Hang on. 1.33. You know, the same thing is also the case for the U.S. pricing. I would say that this would probably come down to the fact that as a UK-based company, Jagex has to also factor in foreign exchange into their price making, not necessarily something just due to currency value, because there are fees when they take these foreign exchanges into account. So that could be
okay.
That could be it.
That could be it.
Thanks, Obama.
He's gone. He's gone. I don't know. This is looking kind of appealing this year, I have to say. I'm going to think about it.
Oh, yeah, it is. Certainly is.
You have to think about it. Because I really want that retro teleport. And I think it can be used for the regular teleport, yes?
Yes.
There we go. So
there you go. Yeah.
Now, that combined with the Hellion Aura, the Rune Metrics discount. I have to be completely honest with you guys. I activated a month of Rune Metrics with a bond when Double XP Weekend came. And I really
won't put it down.
No,
right?
I just let it lapse because I only used it for Double XP Weekend. But I really found it valuable. And, you know, if this is this is what I have to be completely honest about, is when Rune Metrics was created, that is exactly what we wanted to create from our own high scores. But, of course, we don't have access to all that data. So
that's too bad.
Yeah. Anyways. So that's Premier Club 2018 available now. You know, I think what would have been more interesting is if they got on the Black Friday hype train and offered a 10% discount on these prices for this entire weekend, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe
that's not a thing there or something.
Oh, it's everywhere now, believe me.
Is it? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, everywhere now. So
even here in Sweden.
Yep.
That's true, because they do have Black Friday sale for their merchandise shop.
But you know what the funny part about that was? If you convert that to Canadian dollars, it's only $3 off per t-shirt.
What a sale. What a deal, guys. Wow, okay.
All right, we're going to move on to the patch notes right now for this week. A number of interesting little things in here, most of them technical. The shadows on snow have been toned down, which anyone who will have known RS since shadows and the HD option has come into play will know that whenever it snows, there's always a problem of it coming down and looking dirty on screen. So that has presumably been fixed by this. If you are a user of the Borrowed Power wish from Pauline, you will no longer disconnect the player if you're using the wrong spell book. So,
okay.
Disconnections are always bad. It means there's some hook somewhere that wasn't completed. Regenerate is no longer triggered by Revolution. Of course, that's the ability you get in your Constitution life point bar that you can click and heal yourself up.
I know. I wish they hadn't done that.
Well, think about it. That on its own is normally only usable outside of combat.
Yeah, it is. I mean, but it's after you're done.
And more importantly, you can it's already on the action bar without you needing to put the ability in there. If you click on the heart symbol on your action bar that beside your health, you can activate regenerate. You don't need to put it as an ability on your action bar.
Yeah.
Well, you could, but I mean, when it's on your action
like
bar,
if you want to just press it like a button, nice. Right? Hotkey. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Revolution now fires combat abilities when stats are boosted. That's a pretty big bug right there.
Yeah, very big.
I knew that wasn't working right. I kept saying, man, something is wrong. This is not working. And everywhere I go, I'm overloaded. So I'm like, now I get it. Now I know what was happening.
Fixed lag when minimizing and maximizing in normal mode on some Windows systems. Fixed possible causes of crashes when multitasking with other applications on Windows. I've had that before.
Yeah.
Reduce the memory usage of the animation system and also reduce the driver overhead of the animation system, especially on AMD graphics cards. This was a big thing when NXT first came out. It had major performance issues on AMD systems. So I'm glad to see we're working through some of these. And, you know, it just constantly gets better and better as we go. And this is what I always tell people when they are NXT skeptics is that they try to, you know, when the first week of it came out and they're one of those stubborn types who, you know, won't try it again. But NXT has consistently gotten better and better almost week after week when it came out and when the patches come out. And we're at a point now where it's pretty stable, I think.
And it still continues to be better.
Yeah.
And it looked good when it came out. So.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're not using NXT at this point and you had some issue back in 2016, give it another try. It's time. So.
Mm-hmm. It won't make your computer loud.
Depends on your graphics card, Tannis. I had a case before my old GTX 670 died. And the fans on that were really loud, and it spun up a lot for RS. So if you have an older graphics card, that might actually happen. But.
Okay.
Who brought in the Ferrari?
Yeah, good point. Improve robustness of device loss recovery, which means it's less likely for things to render or be broken after or crash after your computer goes to sleep or there's a driver cache or minimizing incompatibility mode or switching GPU. And this is something a lot of people don't realize is that modern laptops have multiple GPUs in them. Some cases they have the Intel integrated GPU into your CPU. And they also have a standalone graphics card as well that can be switched based on power settings. So, and that's a complicated thing for a driver to handle. So it's good to see Jagex taking that into account here. Mm-hmm. Reduce the CPU usage of animation picking and entity logic systems, especially at well below 50 FPS. Okay. We know what animation means, but I'm not entirely sure what a picking and logic system is. So once again, congrats to Jagex for being overly technical with these notes. Reduce stutter and frame skip when loading or moving around, especially on AMD graphics cards. Ooh, I should test this because I had a major problem on my iMac, which is an AMD graphics card, when I would come out of a lodestone and it was loading in one of these areas with a stutter. So that might be something to test. There reduced instances of white or noisy pixels on terrain at extreme glancing angles with anisotropic filtering enabled. I haven't noticed that. Have you guys noticed anything like that?
I don't even know what you just said.
Okay.
That's quite specific.
Right. So what an isotropic filtering is it's a rendering mode you can enable so that you get an accurate, more real world depth perception when you're looking at a plane at an angle. So if you're looking, say, let's just say you're standing in the Lumbridge crater and you look northward a lot. If you don't have an isotropic filtering enabled, you're not going to get as accurate of a plane set. Whereas if you do have an isotropic filtering enabled, it's going to look more realistic. The plane looking forward. That's what that does.
Okay,
and
let's see.
If you had this enabled, you would potentially have white or noisy pixels off in the distance.
Okay, well, that's a nice little touch then, a little cleanup there.
Yeah. Implemented immutable texture storage extension, which may improve performance on some GPUs. I like the keyword there being may.
Yeah, it might help. We're not sure.
Yeah. And finally, fixed an issue which prevented QuickChat from working on QuickChat Worlds.
How? Let that sink in for a minute.
I just love these patch notes because there's so many obscure little things that you might not think were happening in RS, but if you look at the patch note and you see what's happening, oh, there we are. So.
You think that was a way to like further mute dumb people? I can only use QuickChat. Well, not on a QuickChat world, buddy. Sorry.
I mean, there have been a very lots of I like this item jokes running around, so I don't know.
Yeah, and back in the day, if you were under the age of 13, you would only be limited to QuickChat Worlds.
Really?
Yep.
How do they know that?
Like,
you have to like put it in there or something? Like,
you had to put your age in and verify it with an email address. And I mean, you could say you were more than 13, but that's just what they did for default. And I mean, it makes sense because RS at the time was being played by lots of kids. And, you know, it still might be. Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's... Okay, that's different.
Yeah. All right. So I mentioned we were going to talk about something here this week that was going to be a bit of a downer for you guys.
Well, more so for me. Tycho seemed to magically get away with not...
I mean...
The disaster strike him.
I mean, I can... give you a story.
That's just let me introduce this first, and that's the dimension of the dam finale. Tanis, you were killed right off the bat.
Yeah.
Tycho, what was your final position?
Out of 1,000, I ended up at 74th place.
Top 100.
Yeah. Yep, top 100. I reached my goal. Top 100. Even top 75.
All right. So, this kind of went off with a bit of a problem right from the beginning, based on what you guys were saying here. Also, congrats, Tycho. Sorry, that was a top 50 prize. Oops, not a top 100 prize. Never mind. I was going to say congrats on getting the top 50 or the top 100 prize, but there isn't one. So...
don't put salt on my wounds, Shane.
Yeah, I won't do that.
You have no idea how I felt when I was so close and yet so far away.
You have no idea how I felt when I ran out the door and died.
Yeah, blind. Okay. So first off, we started the Dimension of the Damned finale with a 45-minute delay to the login system. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think Jagex gave any reason for what the delay was, did they?
I mean... I was asking around when I were at the lobby and couldn't log in. And no, I only heard that the JMods through Twitter were confirming that, oh, we are having some technical issues.
My guess would be it's probably the thing that screwed the pooch with this whole tournament. And because you could see the JMods coming in and out, like you could see it would jump from like 5 to 10 people, you know, like the world. And so you could see that there were people in there. And apparently when they started that, the Mishima, which was unnecessary anyway, started when they started. So by the time a lot of us got around.
It was too powerful for you guys, and it took you out.
Yeah, and we didn't. And on top of that, there was some kind of a graphic glitch, and they didn't explain what it would look like very well. We're expecting a fog. It's invisible to me. Like, not just to me. I mean, like, this is, like, in general, not because of my eyes or anything. But you couldn't see it. It was invisible.
I come running out there
and just die. I mean, I just run out, and the next thing I know, I'm looking at the login screen going, what happened? Like, what happened?
Okay.
I could only see it during specific occasions.
Okay, so you couldn't see it either.
I only saw it south of Falador towards Remington, but later when I was going towards Port Sarim, I didn't see it and I thought it was removed. So I went in there and rapid fire damage and had
yep, that's where I died.
Run out. Port Sarim.
Yeah, dead in that way.
Okay.
Well, it was more like Port. Yeah, it was right out. I mean, not very far from Falador at all. It was going towards Port Sarim.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the limit is just south of Armadil Tower, just by the fence, going west and east, covering all Port Sarim, going along the stone wall with the cabbage patch, then halfway between the Falador White Wall and Draenor Manor, going up to Barbarian Village and covering all the high ground just outside the Dwarven Mine entrance and Invention Guild and towards Taverley, Birth Hope. So all players could only be literally just outside Falador, especially the northern part outside Falador was very limited, while if you were on the south side, you at least could run around the clan camp and plunder the cabbage patch, which was a very, very hot spot. I mean, Brassica Prime couldn't have been more proud. So yeah. That was it. When we logged in, the miasma was everywhere and closing in all the players in one spot. And as I mentioned pre-show, I could at times see it as small red bubbles coming up from the ground, floating slowly towards the sky, but it was only at times. So if
you know,
I'm going
doesn't
to
seem
give,
right, because that's not something you guys trained for.
No.
No, and especially you in a competition, in a finale, you don't pay attention to the calm detail.
That's right.
I mean, to the calm detail. That's a detail that you only see if you are calm and analyzing the situation, not something you will see during combat or if running away from a zombie.
Well, and I mean, it was my understanding that it was supposed to look like a fog. It was supposed to be like how it is. Because they used this in Dead Man, right? And it's not just little tiny red particles, is it? Like, I could be wrong, but I didn't think that's how it is. So, I don't know. I'm very... This was more of a disappointment, I think, than anything else ever before. This...
Especially when it's been moved, you know, however many times, right?
Yeah. Look at what the damage that did. So they moved – you're supposed to have a competition top 1,000 players. That's the top 1,000 players. And they move it so many times.
Twice.
They lose the high – but the amount of the time span between that, you've lost all the hype around it. People are doubting. By the time we got in there, we had what, Tycho? 500?
499 people.
That participated. So half of the people that should have been competing didn't even compete because of Jagex pushing things back and not getting it right. So way to go, guys. I mean,
but then we also have this about multiple accounts we talked pre-show.
Yeah, so who knows how many people there actually were.
Let's explain this. Multiple accounts. And we're not talking about, you know, multiple actual people playing together, right? What we're actually talking about here is multiple people bringing multiple accounts into the finale for the purpose of farming the bottle caps and trading them to their main.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, they are buying resources from the shops because the bottle caps itself isn't tradable, but some equipment is, especially the runite items. So
that gives you a huge, huge advantage if you had better equipment like that.
Incredibly
huge advantage.
Because
we started off with steel, you know? I mean, so if you were to get adamant or rune... I mean, that's a huge advantage.
I competed during the finale only with steel arrows. And one of the biggest reasons I stayed at 74, even though being constant in combat, was that I never acquired adamant or mithril or rune arrows. So,
and that's, so a, that huge, and that's a huge thing. A huge limitation.
Yeah. Oh, yes. That's a very huge. Even in the when Dimension of the Damned was released, the rune arrows and adamant were the currency just because of how valuable they were. You could trade everything with rune arrows. I mean, a full melee set just for like 150 rune arrows.
Yeah. It's hard to imagine them screwing it up worse. Like, this is the absolute worst case scenario you could have had. And I think part of it is the overthinking of it. Like, you didn't need the invisible gas. You didn't. People would have died. Like, they would have died. And if they weren't going to die, increase the zombie spawns. Don't reinvent the wheel. Like, that's, I guarantee that's why it had been being delayed the way it was being delayed, when that had nothing to do with what we were doing in the qualifier anyway. Now, could you avoid the multiple accounts? I don't know. That it's a tough one. It sucks. And yeah, I don't know how you would do that. I don't know. But it's just hard to think of how they could have made this any worse. Like,
and that's saying something.
Yeah,
that is the reaction coming out of this, and not one of, you know, awe, or, you know, just being shocked in a good way at the amount of work and the amount of difficulty that you experienced.
Yeah, can I give a small summary of how my Dimension of the Damned finale were?
Please.
So, logged in and started preparing myself mentally. All the plans I've been doing, everything has led up to this point, and I was actually very hyped. At the point, I didn't know that 499 of 1,000 had logged in. I mean, only 50%. And then finally, the time came. They were going to open the gates. And even, wow, they have a countdown timer on the screen, like 10, 9, 8, and everybody followed it. And so was a good job to get the hype up. And then gates open, everybody ran out. And my first objective, get Yubo. So I started chopping the yew trees just outside the Falado gate, when suddenly my chat window is getting spammed by death messages. And
how are they dying? Do you know?
Yeah, how did they die? And then did the news come around that 103 people died from the miasma that was surrounding Falador?
Yeah, that's how it happened.
And 103 people is more than a fifth of those who participated. So already at the very beginning, a fifth were called dead.
Unbelievable. Oh.
We forgot about the calling, the people that were getting called because there's a lack of zombies in the middle of the tournament.
So that's
there's so many problems we're forgetting about problems.
Yeah. So I'm getting to that bit. Okay. So the next thing after realizing that the miasma is surrounding us and we can't get out is, wait a minute, I haven't seen a single zombie. Where are they at? I mean, the only zombies I actually saw were from the people running out on the miasma. So there was actually zombie spawning if somebody was stupid enough to run into the miasma.
Right here.
I'm analyzing things here. So some people, you go out in the miasma and bring us all zombies. So I run out and taking very high damage, running back, and then having a small horde on his back. Anyways, I learned later from rewatching the Dimension of the Damned live stream that it was because of the Falador safe zone that also happened in the qualifiers. Luckily, they had a timer on that. So after like X amount of minutes, then it wouldn't be a safe zone anymore. So we actually just went around in circles around Falador waiting for that timer to go down. Nobody knew there was a timer. So we just had to wait naturally. Oh, okay, the most boring finals ever. And the most the activity we did was plundering the cabbage patch Brassica Prime replaced and dancing.
That's real great. That makes for really, really impressive live stream.
And dancing in front of the camera from the live stream that happened at the northeast corner of the Falador wall. I mean, you notice how many people were listening to the live stream while playing because live stream said, come on, dance people. And you get 20 people starting dancing. So that's it. Then finally, the real adrenaline came. Suddenly, zombies started spawning everywhere, from the left to the right, beneath you, grabbing your legs, pulling you down, and sinking their teeth into your flesh. Finally, the finale we had been waiting for. And at the time, I was at the Falador farm. And yeah, the killing began, so to say, and I had an inventory full of cabbages, and I even had planted cabbages on the farming patch, just in case. They died later, but never mind that. And there I was fighting for life and death in a finale that had around 350 people at this point. And this continued for a very, very, very long time until I got a little overconfident when out in the middle of the kill zone brought down two humongous zombies. Then I had of course, the incident of one spawns and you get hit by 2,500 damage. And on top of that, at 2,000 poison damage from the two zombies I brought down. So that was 4,500. And I died. It was only 15 or 20 minutes until the finale would have been over because it was only to be around for 90 minutes before everybody was forcefully logged out. And I got a little sad there, like, but a lot of people had actually watched me on the stream and like, come on, Tycho, you're about to be called and go on. And even the J mods looked at my name on the death list and like, Tycho Elf, it sounds like Typo Elf. And they actually made a joke about me on the stream. And I'm like, I'm going to get you one day for this.
You know, I'm just I looked at some of the video that came from this, and utter and complete chaos from the perspective of what they were streaming. I don't know how anyone could have followed this because, I mean, you can see people running around, you can see zombies and whatnot, but without the context of who's who and with so many people on the ground, it becomes really hard to follow.
That looks all the same.
But for me, it wasn't, because I know that I had a U shield bow on me as my most powerful weapon, so I could distinguish myself. And they actually right-clicked me at a certain point of the stream. So, oh, right-click. Oh, his name is Tycho Elf. So that was very nice. And I'm actually both happy and sad. So I'm going to give a scenario to try to show you how I feel. Imagine you are Indiana Jones and you get a map to some cave that has a golden statue of wisdom. You get to the cave and then you realize that the map is fake. Nothing that says on the map, no rule, is actually valid.
It's a fake.
It's a fake. It's a total fake.
Bonus points to anyone out there who gets that reference. Sorry, I just had to throw that in.
Yeah, of course. So, but you go into the cave. Despite this, you encounter traps, spear walls, arrows flying over your head. But despite all the booby traps, you find the golden statue, grab it, rush toward the exit with a boulder of death just by your back and just by the finishing line. You trip and get and dead. So I'm very sad that I died due to that mistake. But at the same time, I am so proud of myself that despite everything that happened, despite Jagex throwing everything at me, by not following the rules, I'm still happy that I could survive during those circumstances. So that's some kind of pride right there. But
yeah, well, I mean, the top 100 is a pretty good accomplishment, Tycho. So
yeah, thank you. And I realized later that I wouldn't have gotten much higher because I never acquired those arrows that I would have needed to advance much higher in the high scores. Steel arrow damage is very limited.
I see about that.
So I would if I hadn't died, I would probably only end up like 16th place before I was called. And 60th, but at some point, those watching me said, "Tycho, you're on 9th place," and I wouldn't believe it. And I actually had to ask them if they took a screenshot of that.
Did they?
But I don't know. I actually have to ask them. Well. Anyways, so that's my story. And that's my feelings for it. So this is the last nail in the coffin. This is something that I know will follow Jagex for a very long time. And I can't say I'm going to encourage them. The only reason why I'm feeling a bit happy is because I'm proud of I actually survived everything they threw at me. But those like Tannis who died at the very beginning, I can't even imagine the frustration, the anger of waiting a month and then dying that fast. I mean,
don't forget the humiliation, because that's fun too when you got a whole chat room full of people and you're like, woo, mugging for the camera. You're like, yeah, let's go. Getting all hyped up for some Tupac and some Biggie. You're like, yeah, let's do this. Ah! You run out and you die. Going, what just happened? Like, did you guys see that? What did anyone see what happened? Like, I don't know what happened. Yeah. So there's my story. You know, here's a scenario for you. Anyone that's seen like the original American Pie, you know, that
I have not seen that movie.
Nope.
There's a scene in that movie that explains my feeling very, very easily. You'll know it when you see it. It's he's with a foreign exchange student in his bedroom. I'll leave it there, and guys, Google it because you'll see what happens. It's unfortunate.
Is that something we should encourage our listeners?
All I'm saying is it sucked.
Okay. Yeah. So. So I don't think this is something Jagex should try anytime soon. And yeah.
Yeah, because so let's be clear here, is that this was something that needed to happen, and it needed to happen without a hitch when we got to the 18th, because of the multiple times it was delayed. And, you know, I am one to give Jagex a lot of trust and a lot of good faith because I have been around for so long and I want to see them succeed and I want to see them try new and interesting things. But when it comes down to this and you are dealing with a real world prize, you're dealing with people setting aside time on a weekend to play, this is unexcusable, and like you guys said, if they're going to try anything like this in the future going forward, it needs to be completely revamped, and I don't know the best way to go about doing this. Maybe they need to do more internal testing on this, or maybe they need to run a kind of a beta season with no prizes. I don't know. But
and maybe not overthink it. That's part of this, too. I mean, I almost think they're trying to be too cute by half. Because for me, the worst part about this is this gave an opportunity for the RuneScape players that, you know, I mean, this was for the people that wanted to try to be competitive. And maybe we aren't FPS players. Maybe we're not League players. You know, maybe that's, we're not good at that. But there's, I mean, so much of esports is centered around those things. So this was an opportunity to at least give you a chance to compete and do something. And then for it to go like this, it's just a kick in the nuts, man.
I must admit that this really felt like my very first professional competition, because I've been playing RuneScape for a very long time, and doing a competition in the thing I'm at the top at my best of my abilities. I mean, I felt hype, I felt sadness, I felt stressed, I felt happiness. I mean, I felt basically everything. I mean, when I died, I felt like I had let myself down. I felt like, even though being the only survivor of Clan Quest after a couple of minutes in there, that I have let everybody down. And then they are telling me, no, Tycho, you didn't. And I felt happy. And they showed me that you did well. You ended at 74th place. Encountering the unknown. I mean, this really felt like my first real professional competition.
And you know, those are totally normal emotions to have regarding this, because that is what happens in these competitions when you go in and you're not entirely expecting to see what materializes. Because, like it or not, actual training for this event, as if it would have been the real finale, would have been a huge benefit to lots of people. And it's kind of annoying to have a different format in the finale than in the actual event. So, so just a couple of things, last things on this, then I'll let you guys have some final comments here from me. So everyone who participated will receive the pet, in the next coming, games update. The winner was Lexa, and the other top five were Glue, Top Hetalpha, Lord Aeroth, and Omega.
And congratulations to those. You're going to Jagex.
Yeah.
Yes. And Mike, tell them they messed up when you get there.
Well, they're going to want to hear they're going to want to hear a lot from these people about
you know, how did you get past all of our
right? How did you get to the top 5, and how did you do overall, and what was your general strategy, and how can we make this better this time? There's going to be lots of discussion about that, and there's also going to be what I'm going to call a muted celebration about this, because you don't necessarily want to celebrate something that didn't exactly go off as planned. So
the August live stream followed these players a lot, so if you want to do research, that's the first place to start. And I have respect for at least these 5 people for having such massive amount of DPS and managing to get through this just as I did.
So, final question to you guys on this. Should this be done again in the future? And if so, on what conditions?
Your first, Hannes.
Final question. Yeah. Okay. So, maybe I'm a glutton for punishment, but I don't want them to give up. I still want this to work. And I still think it could have worked. They just messed it up. So, yeah, I want them to do it in the future. And I want them to just do it. Like, actually make it happen. We don't even know. Because they didn't even do it. They didn't do it in the first place. So I don't know how it would have went. I mean, I died to an invisible fog. That sucks, man. I think that was one of the main things where they went wrong. I mean, this was supposed to be a zombie survival mode, right? So I understand that they took the tournament idea, kind of borrowed that from OS. That's great. You didn't need to borrow the Mishima from them, too. Because this was a zombie survival mode. If you want to make it harder, then over time, increase the difficulty of the zombies, or increase the frequency of the spawns, or a combination of both. But don't introduce something that is totally new, totally foreign, and something that none of the qualifiers had ever seen.
Yep, key point right there, I think.
So, you know, and finally, I blame Tycho. It was 100% his fault because he was supposed to be my meat shield and I could not find him in the crowd. So, yeah.
I actually had you trailed. I did you to friends with and trailed and stayed away from you at all times.
I was going to hide behind you, man. That was my whole plan. I couldn't find you.
Let me just say that was pretty obvious a week before the finale. So, but you, Tennis, you took the words right out of my mouth. You said exactly what I wanted to say, that if I want this to be done again in the future, I want it, but I don't want it to be soon. This dimension of the damned is going to follow them, whatever it's 1 year or 4 years in the future. But my advice is do a finale where, one, it's confirmed that the game mode is working before announcing a finale, and two, where the finale is as close as possible as the qualifiers. I can give an example. The Miasma, I don't think it should have been in the finale at all. But you couldn't enter Falador after leaving it in the finale. That's something that's cheap to implement. Yeah. And that's something that makes a huge difference because Falador is safe from zombies. It can't spawn. You can relax there. And the banks have a healing area. Without access to those, the finale gets more intense without you even putting, a long amount of time in it. Just make it a one-way door and suddenly it's more intense. So very small details. Miasma, it was too big of a detail. So, yeah, Tanis, you took the words right out of my mouth. So, that's what I had to say.
All right, and now a moment of silence for Dimension of the Damned.
Amen.
All right, so on to some forward-looking content now as to what's coming up in the future of RuneScape, and that is the November 2017 Content Showcase. Now, this is their monthly live stream in order to try and keep everyone apprised of what they're going to be doing in-game regards to the updates. They talked about a number of things here. We already talked about the skilling pet numbers and the combat pet numbers, so we'll skip over that. But the first thing they talked about was Pieces of Hate. So we're going to be getting from this an upgrade to the Pirate Teleport, more locations where it can go. Also, Madame Shi is being introduced into the game, which is an NPC that's going to link the Eastern Lands into ports in the Ark. It's essentially a bridge character between all these pieces of content. Izzy Nobeard is a... Getting a graphical update, which if you look at the concept art that they've shown here, done by Mod Sparky, looks pretty great. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
No.
Yeah. Oh yes. So the only thing missing was the parrot on his shoulder, and they also mentioned that a lot of other pirates would be graphically updated. So you maybe get your Brimhaven rework you accidentally wanted previous show.
That's a good point because that is where his bird is. So
I mean, the release date is early 2018, February-ish. So what's taking so long time? It could be a graphical rework of some piratey area.
Yeah, and plus I think the sense I got from this looking at it, based on what was said, they couldn't show the actual content from this because it was too early on. So I think ultimately... they just want to get it right. And, with a quest, that is definitely something you want to do. So, I say take whatever time you need to take. We don't need a set release date for that. We'll just take it when it comes. So,
yeah. So they're right now going through player suggested rewards and looking which of them are feasible from a development perspective. And then they're going to choose. And regarding the release date, I will quote Mudraven here. The problem with giving a date is that if you do, it handlocks it, hardlocks it,
yep.
And that it becomes frustratingly disappointing if it's not met on time. At this stage, I rather have a more general deadline that allows us to focus on quality, to focus on polish. And it never goes well when something is delayed.
Yeah. And, you know, he hits a nail on the head there, especially when you're dealing with a software development perspective on this, because that is what RuneScape is. You know, whenever you do that, you do need to factor in the foreseeable circumstance that there could be something that delays you by a couple of weeks. And by setting a release date, you are forced to go around that and cut corners, which isn't exactly a good thing to do. So I completely see where he's going with that. There was also the updated barrel chest rework as well, which is going to be a creature that can be killed during the quest. That looks pretty pretty neat as well. So
yeah, and previous quests also. So I hope that gets updated.
Yeah. Next up was that Seekers and Soul Gazers are becoming a Slayer task, which are going to be taking place in the Zamorax hideout, which you access after Dishonor Among Thieves. So, you know, Dishonor Among Thieves, I think we all like that quest. That was a very interesting sixth age quest.
I didn't.
Oh, right, because that was one of the ones with the puzzle accessibility issues.
Yeah. The quest was great, but yeah, that sucked.
Right. So these will, of course, be added to the Slayer Codex. So those of you guys who have completed the Slayer Codex, you will have two more creatures to kill. Thankfully, though, they're not in dangerous areas. These will be at level 71 and 99. They drop something called the Hex Hunter Bow, which yes. We're all aware of. It's a tier 80 bow, but if you are fighting and using the bow against creatures that are weak to magic.
Weak to arrows.
Or weak to arrows, rather.
And the creature is using magic.
And the creature is using magic. Thank you. You're going to effectively have something that's close to a tier 92 bow.
I love it. I love it, love it, love it. Finally, we're getting the niche equipment that we can use for different things, and it makes you feel like you can use a little more strategy with what you're fighting. I love it.
Yeah, that's a specialist bow right there for creatures that use magic and are weak against arrows. I mean, and they are even already strong against creatures that are using magic but are weak against throwing weapons or bolts. But wow, tier 92.
Can you imagine how you're going to be able to clean house with Dark Beast?
Just murder. Right.
Just annihilation. You know, like you talk about some XP rates. Yeah.
Annihilation. Yeah. We are talking about insta kill dogs.
Yes. I can't wait.
Yeah. And it's going to be pretty rare because what ends up happening with this is that it's actually got a higher chance to drop from the elite slayer creatures that are going to be put into this place here. And the creatures that are in the dungeon on their own are going to have the ability to create an amulet that will further attract the elite creatures. So it's kind of a nice synergy there. Whereas if you kill the lower level one, I believe it is, and you get the item to make the, I forget what the amulet's name is, but it attracts
Seeker's Charm.
The Seeker's Charm. Mm-hmm. It'll attract the elite creatures and you'll have a higher chance of getting the Hex Hunter bow. So,
yeah.
And there's also the fact you can create Stalker Arrows from Stalker Essence and Dark Arrows. That continues on with the Dark Beast synergy right there.
Mm-hmm. Panic by Dark Arrows.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Strange that Tier 80 arrows didn't exist in game. And now it will be added.
Oh, they do. Mm-hmm. Royal Bolt, or no... Oh, right.
See, it's all bolts. So yeah. The only question I had was about Dragonbane. I was like, dude, are those 80? Because I know.
Well, they kind of flex based on what you're fighting. So.
Oh, do they? I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. There's a level where it becomes more efficient to use the higher leveled arrows. I think it's somewhere around 90, where it's just better to use those than the Dragonbane. So
I did not know that.
Yeah, because if you always hit, then it's better to use Tier 90 ammunition.
Yeah.
But if, let's say, rune dragons that have such a high defense that you have a chance to miss, then it's better with Bane, arrows, or bolts.
Okay, I got you then. All right.
Yep. All right. Also featured in this stream was a preview of the Christmas event coming up. Christmas Grand Exchange area, Max Guild, and some of Priff as what they've received in feedback. The general purpose of this quest, I don't want to go too much into it, is that Santa wants to bring his toy gnome to life, and there's the kind of link in with the current event that's going on in game right now. And the quest will ultimately focus around bringing that to life. There's going to be various skilling methods involved here for you to get XP in skills that are that we haven't really seen before. And all in all, it looks really festive if you look at some of the video that we're seeing here around the Grand Exchange. And there's also the return of Winter Weekends, which they have released the details for. They're doing something they haven't done before for the Winter Weekends, and that is that they are doing a Menaphos Weekend on December 8th through 11th. 75% increased XP from Shifting Tombs. New city quests will appear twice as fast after completion of a previous city quest. 50% increase in Menaphos reputation. Increased chance to receive Menaphite gift offerings. 25% increased Slayer XP within the Sophanim Slayer dungeon. Bonus chance at jeweled statuettes when wearing a Ring of Wealth, and double chance Scepter of the Gods and Black Ibis while at Pyramid Plunder. Double experience from Cloverbird hunting. 50% increased base chance of successfully pickpocketing in Menaphos, and triple XP from harvesting Luminous Wisp, which of course is in the Divination Colony down there in the desert. So, Menaphos weekend.
Yeah, I guess we can see what people aren't doing by how much of a boost they've given it, right?
Yeah. Other weekends are November 1st to 4th being the combat weekend with 50% Slayer increased XP. 15th to the 18th is focusing on mini games, you know, plus one golden ticket per Castle Wars per game, regardless of win, lose, or draw, plus one medal from Fish Flingers, plus 50% Protus points at the Livid Farm, for those of you guys who need to complete that requirement. Double Zeal from Soul Wars, double points from Stealing Creation. 22nd through the 25th is gathering and support skills, so divination springs last twice as long, and rich divination nodes spawn every 10 minutes instead of every 20 minutes. Dungeoneering, double tokens from regular dungeoneering. No XP penalty upon death, that's a big one. Agility, higher chance of getting the pit minigames, and mining nodes and trees will replenish twice as quickly.
29th, so no farming.
Yeah, no farming, unfortunately. 29th to the 1st of January is clue scrolls, plus one free reroll for clue scroll per day, improved chance to get clue scrolls from drops and pickpocketing. Jilly Willikers is going to give you a free clue scroll each day at noon, depending on your total level. Each clue scroll completed will also include a festive box containing festive food and has a chance of containing one of the following items: Slayer VIP tickets, Silverhawk down, Tight Springs, Charms, Experience Lamps, and Stars. And then finally, 5th through 8th of January is the Artisan Skill, which includes crafting, fletching, smithing, runecrafting, and herb lore. Big points here are runecrafting, increased node spawns, and double rewards at runespan. Herb lore, extra 2.5% chance to save a secondary ingredient when mixing potions. And construction, a chance to retain a plank with the scroll of proficiency is increased by 10%. And finally, for the last week on December 1st. Oh, that's a typo there.
No, it's during the whole winter weekends from 1st of December to 8th of January, you will have 25 voyages per day instead of 15 at ports.
And 30% extra resources.
Yeah, 30% extra resources and the Barmaid's special voyage on Saturday and Sundays as well as Thursdays.
You know, I'm actually really looking forward to these, and it's going to give a renewed reason to actually, you know, do more in RuneScape than I normally do over the winter break.
Yeah, it's gonna be cool.
Oh yeah, I see a lot of things I can do here. I mean, on 2 weekends the Slayer experience is boosted, and then we have the Clue Scroll weekend, and we're soon getting a Clue Scroll rework.
Yeah, so it's good to
So
do those clues because they're tracking right now.
yeah, we will soon come to that. So 29th of December to 1st of January, be in game, even if your parents tell you not
And that's a perfect point to jump on to what you were just saying there, Tycho, about the Clue Scroll rework. So they have detailed more about the Clue Scroll rework, and it's going to include a Clue Scroll outfit, and that outfit is going to be earned with currency that you receive when doing Clue Scrolls. This includes a jacket, shorts, guards, greaves, and backpack. Each of those with a unique special effect. The jacket gives you a direct teleport to the clue location. The shorts performs the correct emote for your emote clue, so you don't need to rummage through that emote list. The
Oh, yes.
guards allows you to use teleport scrolls from the bank. The greaves give you infinite run energy for a period of time. The backpack will allow you to reroll the current active clue that you have for that tier.
Wow.
Yeah, and overall, a set effect for this is that each piece will act as the correct hidey hole equipment piece and luck of the dwarves when opening the casket, providing you have already stashed the hidey holes with the appropriate items and you have luck of the dwarves. And you'll also need one less clue to gain a reroll point and ability recharge, and one less step to complete each clue scroll. Now,
On top.
this kind of looks a little bit overpowered, but
That's what they addressed at the
It costs
stream, but yeah,
5,000 points for
Machani
the
did.
entire outfit.
And that's a lot of clues. This it will be given to the players that have done a lot of clue scrolls that are doing this as their everyday job. This is the people that deserve it and that want to continue doing clue scrolls for that third age die and that real equipment that you see all these rich people going around with.
They missed an opportunity here too. Oh gosh, hold on.
Don't say
Get
it.
ready,
Don't
get ready
say
for
it. I know where you're going. Please.
the
Please.
Shane knows. I'm just saying, I hate clues, but that outfit would make it easier, and I would be willing to throw some money down
Don't
for
say it. Don't say
it.
it. Oh. I think we have to censor that, Shane.
Oh no, there's no censorship here.
I was just letting them in on a little secret there,
Well, speaking of new things that you can get, there's a boatload of new rewards here, including second age armor and weapons. They're augmentable and they're going to be for tier 91, which, when you think about it in the past, what from Clue Scrolls is usable at endgame, right?
Nothing.
Nothing right now.
Fashionscape.
So this new tier of Clue Scroll is actually going to provide useful armor, and it actually looks good. So the second age armor, of course, height of Zaros' empire, and you can see the melee ranged and magic sets here, as well as the weaponry as well. So
Heavily
very cool.
Sarah-Dominist inspired.
Yeah. I wonder what these are going to go for. Probably max cash on the first day, I'd imagine.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
first day
Well, and it's
always
supposed to
max
be
cash.
isn't it supposed to be just as rare as like a third age? So I mean, it's not going to be a lot of this stuff.
Nice. I really like this. I really like this. And it just keeps getting better because they are also adding another reward item here, and they're adding pajamas to the drop tables for clues.
I actually remember the Christmas mini quest where you have to play the Ghost of the Christmas Past, Present, and Future, where you visit this old man in a pajamas that they actually
Yeah, and
used.
that's the model here they used in the stream, except it's very old.
Yeah, but that's so fun. I mean, who goes to sleep? Who has ever been a bed in RuneScape?
That's a very good point. But you did used to
Yeah,
sleep
you
in
can't get in a
you
bed.
did need you did used to use a sleeping bag in old school, and that was their way of deterring botting and whatnot. Or not old school, sorry, classic.
Classic, yeah.
Woo.
You're way older than me, Shane.
Oh, I remember it. I remember when they added the sleeping bag.
Oh, dear. There
and initially, you would just click it and it would work, but that wasn't enough of a deterrent because people figured out ways to automate that. And later, they added a string of numbers you had to type in as well with that.
Well, that just sounds terribly annoying. Yeah. So.
And
Shane's the OG. He's been here from the beginning.
And also, they're getting a Robin Hood outfit and a fully updated Robin Hood hat and boots to enable you to use them at higher tiered.
Yeah, is anyone else feeling like Jagex is kind of like an abusive girlfriend now? Because hear me out, okay?
Yes.
Because they do things that are constantly disappointing you and making you cry. But then they do something that gives you hope. And you think, well, maybe things will be better. All these outfits, I'm going, well, that's cool.
I really like this the look of the better. Robin Hood outfit.
Yeah.
It can also be tinted with color variation.
Yeah. About that, Tanis, I am worried about Jagex putting in too much Tier 70 and Tier 80 armor and weapons to the end where it's you have 10 Tier 70 armor to choose from, 10 Tier 70 weapons, mm-hmm. and 10 Tier... I mean, I'm worried about that. And if Jagex are putting them in between, like, Tier 82, I'm thinking, what's the point? Because you're not going to switch weapon between every second level. But the Hex Hunter bow actually shows that it can be done since it's a specialist weapon. You can use it as a normal Tier 80 bow, and at the same time, it becomes a Tier 92 bow for those specific situations.
Yeah, and I think that's the direction they should keep going. I mean, I don't know how much is necessary with the second age armor because it's going to be so rare that, I don't know. But that's something where, like, okay, so this is Zarros-inspired second age armor. You could give people, like, a little bit of a bonus when they're fighting anything to do with, like, God Wars, with God Wars 2 or the original God Wars. You know what I mean?
That would
like,
work.
You could do something like that. And I think that is the direction they should go. And we could use some more in the 90s, really, because the 80s are getting flushed out. But I think the 70s and 80s, that has to be the sweet spot for where most people are. Or I wouldn't see them continuing to cram it into those two tiers.
Yeah, and that makes sense because, 1 million XP and then you get to level 80, so that's kind of the sweet spot. Just a bit of a market look here. Since this stream was announced, the Robin Hood hat has shot up in price about 5%.
Ooh.
That's a lot. And another thing, it's the armor is Saradomin inspired. So even though the second age is apparently the big age of Saros, it's the armor is Saradomin inspired.
Which is good. I think that kind of gets back to the roots of humans on Gilenor at that time. Yeah. So.
I'm supposed to have a complete timeline in my head, but I actually have to admit I'm a little bit of a failure of a lore hound because I haven't memorized every event or anything. Actually, I even haven't memorized the summary of the Second Age. I have to get down on that at some point.
All right, but next up, tuxedos and ball gowns.
Yay.
And that was the real laughter. You know why, Shane?
Because they're gonna let the men wear the ball gown and the women wear the tuxedo as well.
Yes. That's the fun part.
I mean, Hold on, Tycho. I can't pass this up. But aren't there enough men wearing dresses in this game already?
Well, ever since the wizards in Wizard's Tower were blue skirts that didn't give any armor value back in the days, well, you got a point.
Hey, I'm just saying that is not a girl that you were talking to. Just AKA, you know, or no, PSA, that is not a chick. That's just let everyone know that.
You know, these look really good. I wish there was some different recoloration options on them, but I guess that could come in time. So, and there are also more rewards to come with this. They just haven't detailed them fully in this live stream. So this is just the tip of the iceberg. Moving on from that, a bit of a preview of a very, 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 very early proof of concept regarding safe cracking. They basically just got the playstyle down with this, and they're going to look at if it can be expanded into a full game update. The idea behind this is, as detailed at RuneFest, was that there would be safes around the world in various rich areas. It would break up the thieving skills so that you would say go to Varrok, do some safe cracking, and then move back to your paladins or whatever in Ardoyan. And then at the end of your safe cracking mission, you would get a notification that it's time to go back. You would do it again. And then after you're done at the end of the day, you would head to the Thieves Guild and talk to the Thieves Guild master there, I guess, and trade these items you get from the safes in for hanky points and XP, and ultimately an item that would prevent stuns for 30 seconds called the Thieves Kit.
Yeah, that you can buy from the points you get from this. The ability for a 30-second stun protection, not the stun in combat, but only from thieving. And you can buy the ability to add a lockpick to the tool belt.
Yay, that's nice.
And that's actually something I suggested for Pieces of Hate, but they took it, and it's going to come.
Hopefully. Cool. That is if this update gets past, you know, the initial playtest and something they want to do.
Yes.
Also, this runs from level 65 all the way up to 99, so it's a good way of breaking up that mid to high level thieving segment. So.
And another thing. I almost, it felt like I was going to break my hand from the intensity of clicking pickpocketing on those hardy nights, especially as I was farming court summons. That was actually a health issue.
Oh yeah, I believe it.
So this is going to improve the health of the players, believe it or not.
Yeah, and thieving is one of those few skills left that is actually very repetitive like that. So, good on Jagex for adding a method to break it up. They also brought in an overview of some of the upcoming ninja fixes that they're going to be doing, including one that we just voted on recently, and that was the Wisp recoloring.
Divination Disco.
Yeah, Divination Disco. Were you on that episode?
Oh, maybe, Shane. Maybe.
It was Tycho, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was me. I was there with Sirion, and it was the same episode where you said I wouldn't be returning for a long, long time. And here I am.
You know, initially I thought this wasn't needed, but based on what they showed here in the stream, the colors actually look good.
See, my question is how well are we really going – how well will I be able to see them? Because right now, the Wisps are kind of big. They're bright. I can actually – they stand out against the background. What's going to happen when they're colored? I don't know.
The desert camouflaged.
One. Because it blends right into the floor.
Yes.
So that is a bit of an issue. But I mean, they look nice, and even for me, it's a little bit hard to see. I will give them that, especially the desert one. But
yeah, I actually had problems seeing that. I mean, it's only the movement of them. It's circling around that makes me see. Okay, there is a wisp there, but the color is identical to the sand. That's a problem.
So who came up with? I mean.
It was a ninja. It was a ninja fix that was voted in by the players.
Well, way to go, players! You just made divination harder for yourselves.
Well,
and me.
For the moment, it's one wisp, but let's see how the other ends up. I mean, there is one green, but I don't think it will end up that camouflaged in the grass. Hopefully.
Yeah, sometimes I think they should go back and go, well, okay, why did we make them this way in the first place? Because maybe there was somebody in the initial development of divination that said, hey, we need them to be able to stand out and be easy to click on.
Yeah. And see, this is the problem we always come to with ninja fixes, is that players suggest ninja fixes, but they're not optimal.
Mm-hmm.
So another thing that they have shown as a future coming ninja fix is the ability to get a live preview of a certain boss monster. If you're in the beast tab, you don't need to go into the more in-depth panel to look at that. You can just rotate the image right there and get a 3D view of whichever boss creature you want to look at. So that's nice.
Yeah. And as they joked about, if you want, you can look at Araxes' backside.
Yeah. And another great thing here is that you're now going to be able to see right off the bat what is equipped on your ships by just using the overlay in the player own ports interface. That's the word I was looking for. Yes. It'll tell you if you have a cannon or what hull you have there, and you'll be able to see from a glance, and you won't need to go into the submenu to look.
This is a really, really good update. Do you know what I actually do?
What do you do?
I use my clan Vexillum to have a quick teleport to the ports portal in Priftinas and get there, and I have memorized all the graphics for the different ship parts.
Oh boy.
But this will make it to see what's equipped before I click on the button. But this will make it much easier. Much, much easier.
You know the captain's log will take you right there, right?
No, but the clan Vexillum is multipurpose. It's a weapon. You can teleport quickly to it, to clan camp in Falador and to Priftinas. I mean, no slow lodestone teleport. This is a quick teleport. And what's more, you can advertise your clan with it for the community, for the well-being of humans. What more can you do with it? You can.
Yes, we can. There's another reference for you guys out there. Moving on from the ninja fixes, they did have a preview of the December Advent Calendar rewards, and these look great.
Some
as well.
Cool stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Tony the Snowman is a little pet that it's got a really, really neat run animation. You gotta really see the see it here on stream or when it comes out to get it. But basically, the snowman rolls and he uses his wooden hands to move around and whatnot. So there's that. There's also present weapons. A present head override, the Christmas tree cape, and
I want that.
Yeah, me too. And a wreath shield. So,
and the Christmas bag.
Yeah,
that's
the Christmas
sack.
Oh, yes, that one.
That's almost better than Santa's sack, believe it or not.
Yeah.
That is the very reason I want to be able to have a backpack and a cape at the same time. Why can't I have my Master Quest cape with a Santa sack on my back? Why?
You wouldn't be able to see the quest icon then, Tycho.
But it's so low on Master Quest capes.
Particles.
Yeah, I mean, the normal quest cape, you can't see the symbol, but the Master Quest cape, the symbol is so low, so you will be able to see it. So, please, can't. I really want a chain. This is something I really want.
Well, let's get writing to Jagex on that, and maybe they can make it happen. So,
yes,
it looks really good overall. I'm pleased. Yeah, and the last thing that went over here was a bit of a preview on the aura management interface. It has since been moved from calling an aura bag to aura management. Basically, all auras now are going to be accessible by this UI. They can be activated without equipping them and moving them to and from the bank. You'll also be able to favorite auras and activate them via right click, and then it will appear on your character as an indication of what the active aura is. You can also extend with Visvax from this interface and access Death Store as well. So,
I mean, shout out to Mod Harrison and the Ninja team for doing this. This is the most. I'm a bit speechless because all auras are no longer objects, but in this aura management that you can find in your equipment interface. And if you activate one, it will show up in your aura slot. And when you deactivate it, it disappears from there.
The real time, with the time remaining.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
real cool. Time. And you can deactivate warning messages. You can favoritize auras to make them a right click and just activate it. You can extend them with WizWax directly at the interface and with the death refresh.
Yeah.
And switch during combat.
And switch during combat. Wow.
This is a huge update, believe it or not, because, you know, as it is right now, I'm imagining this, that auras are technically individual items that impart an effect on players. So basically what they have done is they have gotten rid of the idea that there are physical objects that are going to be equipped on the player. And the only thing left for that physical object to do at this point is to sit in that aura slot on your character, and the rest is just done via a top level interface. So this is actually really smart implementation of this.
And just a little, this is a reason why we need to be patient sometimes.
Exactly.
Because this was talked about back in July. And if it had been pushed out because they had a hard deadline and it's pushed out, it would have came out, I don't know, broken or unfinished.
Well, it would have been an individual bag, and you would have just withdrawn the items, and it really wouldn't have been that great. So.
And this is so much better because we said, whoa, 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 wait. That's not what we had in mind. And they actually, they've done a good job. Like, I can't wait for this.
Are you saying the community helped Jagex at this point?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I guess.
A little bit, but. And I would like
community can be of help.
I would like to highlight that everything we have talked about here is content showcase items and not necessarily December behind the scenes. So what you're hearing now, we're at the end of November, doesn't mean any of these are coming out in December except for the Christmas items. So let's just keep that in mind as we move forward, and we're still a good ways off from all of these updates coming into game. I forget which one it was. The Clue Scroll rework, they said, we don't have it. We don't have an ETA for this yet, and rightly so.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Pieces of Fate, for example, is February-ish. So
give or take.
Some of these you won't see in a long time. But if you buy the Premier Club, you are guaranteed to see it sooner or later.
All right. So one final piece of news before we move on to tech news this week. Some further drop table items. I'm not going to talk about all of these because I don't think some of them are that interesting. Specifically, I'm going to skip over the Revenant drop tables. I'm going to start with the Visage, then the Abomination, then the skill outfits. And then a bit about the Kopesh. So, Draconic Visages, you ready for this?
Oh, yes.
They are 1 in 10,000, except for fighting at Celestial, Adamant, Rune Dragons, the Abomination boss, Arhat, and Anagami. And it's also different for both the KBD and QPD, but those rates have already been revealed. 1 in 5,000 for Adamant Dragons, 1 in 2,500 for the Abomination, and 1 in 512 for Celestial and Rune Dragons and Arhat and Anagami.
I've gotten so many of those. That's weird.
Right.
That's so weird.
Wow. I mean, I understand why they were so popular and at the same time so rare.
And so expensive.
Back in time.
Back in the day when they first came out, Mike got one of these. From a black dragon. So that's 1 in 10,000.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep.
Shane Luck.
No, it wasn't me. That was Mike.
Oh, okay.
No. Okay. So the Abomination, 1 in 11.5K for the Abomination cape.
Oh, that thing is worth, I think it was 200 or either 400 mil. It's the most powerful strength cape in game, if I remember right. That's tradable.
Yeah. And, you know, that's after Hero's Welcome.
Yes.
And, you know, 1 in 11.5K, though. You know how rare that is.
That's insanely rare, and the boss is tough too. It has a 100% accuracy melee attacks, and that it's based on your maximum health. So you don't want to have armor with life bonuses on it.
No. One in 1,000 for a dragon full helmet from that. And once again, dragon full helmet is something people just keep saying these days for a cosmetic. Yeah. 1 out of 50 for 5 to 25 Bane Ore, and 1 out of 130 chance at either Dragon Plate Legs or Dragon Plate Skirt.
All right.
Now on to the elite and regular skill outfits. 1 out of 846 chance for a gold nymph to appear at the lava flow mine after a successful mine at the crust. That's pretty rare.
Very rare.
Considering, you know, how many people use lava flow mine, right? So these things are not that common at all in game. 1 in 10 chance for your next piece of the Lumberjack outfit from the zombie Lumberjacks during Temple Trekking and Berg de Rot Ramble is the chance for that. And on Hard Path, there's a roughly a 61 out of 1425 chance of encountering the Fix the Bridge scenario. And in this scenario, there's a 1 out of 2 chance to spawn the zombie Lumberjacks. And if you obtain a piece of outfit, you cannot obtain another piece in the same scenario.
Hmm.
So that's important to know for anyone going after Lumberjack. Because for the longest time, it was thought, oh, just get the Fix the Bridge and kill zombie Lumberjacks in there. And, you know, just keep killing them even if you get something. So you can only get one in there, and that's it. That's good to be clear of. And I know so many people who spent hours doing this. It certainly felt like way more rare than 1 out of 10. So
I got it almost straight away without trying.
Okay, then they had to have changed it from back in the olden days when it came out.
No, but I've been doing this since the old days.
Since it came out?
Well, almost. I mean, I remember myself as a noob Saradomanist role-playing to cleanse the evil of Mauritania. and I've been doing this for a very, very, very long time. Don't ask me how I started that role-play.
Okay. 1 out of 100 chance and 1 out of 25 chance while scoring a perfect ceremonial sword. When doing the artisan's workshop to obtain a piece of the blacksmith's outfit. Now, this just seems to come out of nowhere. If you roll a 200-sided die, and if that number is under your cash score, then you obtain a piece of the diviner's outfit from earning experience in the divination cash. So that's, you know.
That's interesting.
So the higher your score, the higher the chance of you getting one of the outfit pieces.
Yeah, and you can get 100 points. So yeah. 100 of 200, that's a 50% chance.
Right.
Wow, is it really that high?
I guess. I don't know. I mean, I got most of mine from Treasure Hunter when they were on there.
Yeah.
So.
Also available from Treasure Hunter.
1 out of 1,000 chance when searching the rubble in the Flash Powder Factory to have a 1 in 5 chance to obtain a piece of the Rogue armor. This is increased to 1 in 100 if you're wearing either the Rogue or Factory mask, which makes sense. 1/3 chance from taking part in the pit to earn a piece of the Nimble outfit. You gotta love the Nimble outfit. I know I do. And to obtain elite skill outfit fragments, you must be training the appropriate skill. And if you have opted in to collect fragments and have the required levels, you will earn 90 to 111 fragments every 5 minutes. If you're level 99, you will earn double the fragments. And if you've achieved enough XP for virtual level 120, you will earn triple the fragments. Meanwhile, if you're 200 mil XP in the skill, then you earn quadruple the amount of fragments. And ultimately, there is a 1 in 2,500 chance to obtain 3,600 elite outfit fragments, regardless of your level. And of course, 3,600 puts you a long way to creating one piece of that outfit. I think it puts you the entire way, I think. Does it? I'm not entirely sure.
Well, it's close, something like that.
Yeah. I'm not sure what the numbers are on that, but it's either one piece of the outfit or the entire set.
No, it's not the entire set.
Okay, so one piece then. For Pyramid Plunder, 1 out of 625 chance, or 1 out of 45 chance with the Master Camouflage outfit or Tier 3 luck to obtain the Scepter of the Gods from the enraged or engraved sarcophagus in the 8th room of Pyramid Plunder. And for black Ibis pieces, the number can be reduced by several different factors without any buffs or benefits. The chances start at 1 in 2,300 for a piece of black Ibis outfit from a jar. And this number is first halved if you're wearing the Scepter of the Gods, then reduced by a further 10% if you got the Master Camouflage outfit, and then reduced by 3% again if you have Tier 3 luck or active being worn. This means that your best chance at obtaining a black Ibis outfit piece is 1 in 1,003. Note that you cannot obtain a piece of the black Ibis outfit if you are under level 78 thieving.
Never gotten one.
Yeah. But I mean,
one piece.
Who does Pyramid Plunder these days?
A lot, actually, since they have a stone in there. I need to complete my collection.
You don't need it, though, with the exosuit. I mean, it's better than the Ibis.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why it's not that big of a deal, I think. Mm-hmm. And finally, for the Kopesh of the Caridian, which is in the Sophonim Slayer dungeon, 1 in 15,000 chance or 1 in 8,000 chance to obtain the main hand weapon. And 1 in 800 Holy chance crap. Of obtaining an offhand Kopesh of the Caridian from opening the treasure chest in Shifting Tombs. Wow. Holy crap indeed.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the tier 92 scimitar that is further enhanced by the Magister.
Wow. I always had a distant dream of maybe making one of those, but maybe not. Yeah, wow.
Just so I'm right, the Kopesh of the Caridian, isn't that a tier 82 weapon that then gets updated to tier 92? It gets updated
to tier 92 with the Magister.
Yeah, but still, 1 in 15,000... And but then that makes one sense in 8,000 on task.
Because that's a PVM drop for potentially a tier 92 weapon.
Yeah.
But the upgrade is still so much. It costs so much if you have to battle the Magister for I don't know how many times. We discussed this in a previous episode. So if you are curious on that, go back a couple of episodes and where you can listen to me talk about it, but sadly I don't have those numbers in my head at the moment.
And there is no drop post this week, but in a couple of weeks, they're going to talk about skilling pets.
Wow, the one thing they said they wouldn't reveal.
Right?
The one thing that was so complex and so...
You know,
people were raging that... How can somebody with level 40 divination get the pet?
Right. I'm a little bit – I have mixed feelings about that, but we'll talk about that when it arrives. So.
Yeah, I don't – yeah, I don't even want to know.
Right?
It just is. It just is.
It's an act of God.
Mm-hmm.
Leave it to the RNG, the gods of RNG.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're going to move right on to tech news right there because that was a huge RS segment. We got lots of interesting tech news this week and something everyone needs to be aware of first, and that is that Uber in 2016 had a data security incident. So
it's just an incident.
Yeah, that's the way they say it. So In late 2016, Uber became aware that two individuals outside the company had inappropriately accessed user data stored on a third-party cloud-based service. It didn't breach the corporate systems or infrastructure, they would like us to know. Outside forensic experts have not seen indication that this included trip location history, credit card numbers, bank account numbers, social security numbers, or dates of birth. However, the individuals were able to download files containing a significant amount of other information, including the names and driver's license numbers of around 600,000 drivers in the United States and some personal information of 57 million Uber users around the world, including the drivers described above. This information included names, email address, and mobile phone numbers. And what they have not got to so far of this is that they initially paid hackers $100,000 to delete the information. But obviously they should have come clean at the time that the data breach happened, because, I mean, anytime you have personal information like this floating around here, that is a no-go, especially in the modern day world. So what Uber is doing about this is they are taking Matt Olson, a co-founder of a cybersecurity firm and former general counsel of the National Security Agency, the NSA, and director of the National Counterterrorism Center, to help Uber think through how to best guide and structure security teams and processes going forward. They're also notifying all the drivers whose license numbers were downloaded. They're providing these drivers with free credit monitoring and identity theft protection, notifying regulatory authorities, and while they have not seen evidence of fraud or misuse tied to the incident, they are monitoring affected accounts and have flagged them for additional fraud protection. So, it can happen to anyone. It's happened to Sony before. It has happened to Uber in 2016, except we didn't hear about it until right now.
Well, and look at the Equifax, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Stuff like that. So when – this will be interesting. I have an interesting question for you, Shane. At what point do governments need to step in with some regulations on these companies' security and keeping our information safe? Because whatever, it's not working right now. I mean, we hear about this every couple months.
It's something that the governments can't do because they are even more vulnerable to this than the corporations are.
Then what on earth are we going to do?
There needs to be a massive change, not only in the corporate world, but also from the government perspective. All governments need to start focusing in on security, not only of preventing systems from being hacked in terms of, you know, cybersecurity from Russia and China, but also just in general malicious practices that come with being on the internet. And, you know, there's lots of discussion about what can be done about this, but ultimately, you know, from a regulatory standpoint, the only way to go about this would appear to be some form of privacy law. But you know how privacy laws work. There's something that are effectively double-edged swords. So at this point, I feel that it's more up to the corporations here to be more responsible in disclosing this, especially for such a company that, you know, came onto the scene with a huge splash like Uber did. They effectively mm-hmm. disrupted the transport industry in so many cities. So,
but they'll just don't. I don't know. I fear for that, because in my opinion, they'll never do anything to cost them a dollar unless it's going to cost them a dollar and 1 cent more if they don't do something.
Yeah, and you see,
at this point, it's not costing them enough.
And you see, people will have this in their mind when they start using Uber next, and that might shift towards that side of things. So who knows, really?
Yeah. But, scary.
Yeah, so if you've used Uber in the last year or 2016, you should probably make sure your passwords and everything you put to Uber is up to date and safe. So, 57 million yeah. accounts. Next up in tech news, Belgium is doing something regarding loot boxes in Europe. So, you know, with the whole thing we talked about recently regarding the Star Wars loot boxes and loot boxes mm-hmm. in other games that are effectively seen as a form of gambling by many, the country's gaming commission is continuing its investigation. The most recent news on this is, according to Belgian news site RTBF, Belgium's gaming position hasn't actually finalized its decision on whether or not these loot boxes are gambling, but they say that the statement that appeared in the original report stating that the mixture of money and addiction is a game of chance. So what they wanted to initially happen with this is that if a game has a loot box mechanic, people need to know exactly what they're going to be getting to remove effectively what is a game of chance. And, you know, I can see the merits in doing this, but at the same time, are people going to continue to buy these boxes in the huge numbers that they do if they know what the true chances are?
Yeah, but there is a difference if they, if we say I buy 100 loot boxes and there is no chance that I get anything above the common material, or that it's guaranteed that I get one rare item or uncommon or ultra rare or elite for every 10 or 50 or 100. So
Yeah.
that means that in a way it's not a game of chance
Right.
because you know
And you
you
hit the
are
nail on the
getting
head.
something in the end.
Yep. You're always going to get something. It's just a question that, oh, I'm not going to get the exact grand prize, but I'm going to get something. So.
Yeah, but that something might be complete and utter worthless crap.
Yeah, or it
Like, I
might
don't
be
think
so
this is any.
small that it doesn't really count for
Yeah, see, I don't
much.
think this is any different than when you go and sit down at a roulette table, you know what the odds are. If you sit at a blackjack table, you know what the odds are.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a secret. So I
Yeah.
don't. This is Belgium's way for trying to make up for Jean-Claude Van Damme. Thank you, Belgium.
I'm sorry,
Appreciate
which make up for?
it. Jean-Claude Van Damme.
What is that?
Wow. The guy that did Bloodsport, he used to be like big old movie star, and he's like really cheesy. Really?
I am not
Okay.
familiar
I'm
with that.
alone.
No
I'm
idea.
so alone. Okay. Well, there you go. 90s movies.
Oh, okay. They also want them to not be as aggressive and not target young people as much. So they also call for closer cooperation between government, software developers, and rating agencies.
I can understand that because who walks to a real life casino these days when they are like 50 or maybe 100 online?
I guess if you want the social factor.
Well, they are your enemies in a way.
True, true.
I mean, if you look them in the eye, you don't see the eyes of friendship. No, you see it's on.
Yeah.
You get free drinks and perks to comp your room. You know, there's reasons.
Yeah, so what do you guys think? You guys think loot boxes are gambling and they should be toned down, or is it
Yeah,
okay?
absolutely.
I
Yeah,
think
I
they are
hate loot boxes.
gambling. Yeah, they are gambling, no doubt about that. But I think they can lower the damage they do by inserting you are certain to get one rare within every 50. And then, of course, it's a gamble if you get it on the first
Right.
or on the 50th. But at least so you know you get something at the end of the day with the money you are putting into it.
See, to me, it's just shady. That's a shady practice. If you're going to do your microtransactions, fine. If you're going to do your cosmetics, fine. Put a price tag on it and let us decide if we want to buy it or not. Anytime you're doing this chance, and it does, it's preying on people that are younger. It's preying on people that may have mental health issues, addiction issues, and they know it. They know damn well what they're doing. They're trying to exploit this. I mean, this is like when Camel Cigarettes would try to market to kids.
Right.
It's the same thing. You know, they know what they're doing, and they know it works. That's why they're doing it.
Star Trek Online is running a loot box promotion. They're bringing in their wild card loot box for the Black Friday weekend. They're also discounting keys by 25% for the Black Friday weekend as well.
Yeah.
So. And like I talked about in my Reality of Microtransactions article, that is where you get some of the highest tiered chips. So yeah. But anyways, we'll definitely have to watch out for what happens with this. And once again, I just like to highlight that we don't have anything this extreme that can, in my view, realistically be called gambling in RuneScape. So
No, it's even
No.
something you can get banned for.
Yeah.
But if they ever try to introduce a loot box, we must stand
Oh,
stand
yeah. And I
by
mean, JX shows
it.
what you're going to get in the current crop of boxes that you're opening as a chance. So there you go.
Yeah, and I'm really happy they are doing this to show that it's not okay to go too far. To show that at least You can time to tone it down.
All right. And our final piece of tech news this week is, a big, scary headline that the internet has been obsessing about here. So the headline is, Google collects Android user locations even when location services are disabled.
Wow.
Google collects everything all the time.
So. Yeah, that's right. So basically, the complaint behind this is that, you know, if you disable location services in the settings of your device, you expect to not be tracked. But since the beginning of 2017, Android phones have been collecting addresses of nearby cell towers where you have been, even if location services are disabled, and sending that data back to Google. The ultimate result of this is that Google can ultimately tell where you are, regardless of whether or not you have location service activated. Now, Google has this data because what Google has as one of its core missions is that they want to be able to know what kind of mobile internet experience people are getting wherever they are. So if they can correlate that there is a weak signal at this location, Google can put pressure on the people who own the towers in that area to make them of higher quality and ensure better coverage there. That is likely what this data is used for. This data is never available to third-party developers because Android prevents and iOS prevents location data from going to an application unless the user explicitly enables it in the settings. And Google also says that they have been using this to manage push notifications and messages on Android phones, which basically, I think, means that, you know, if we're going to be getting a notification for your messaging application or whatever, they need to know where to send that regardless of, you know, whether or not you have location, so they can, I guess, better geolocate for that. Google also says that these were never used or stored and that the company is actually taking steps to end this practice of using this data and collecting it. So, and I mean, this is, I think, a good example of Google being a good internet citizen, because if this data was being collected and Google did nothing about it, and they were using it to target you for advertising, then that would be pretty disrupting, would it not?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. So Google has taken the right approach on this. Any browser, any app you use can't get the location. So this, I mean, yeah, Google has your location. They also know practically everything about you based on what you type into their search engine. There was a study done not too long ago that you can build an accurate profile on someone just based on what they type into their search engines. So I think the online media is making a bigger deal out of this than they needed to.
I'm actually happy with the say that we're going to tune it down, because that's something that's very hard to do. I mean, information is power. Knowledge is power. And saying something like, well, you know, we're going to know less. We are going to let things be unknown. That is actually pretty hard.
Right.
When you already have access to that.
And you hit the nail on the head. Google is a knowledge company. So.
Well, I just worry about who can get that knowledge. Because, you know, and I think it's natural for you guys to – you have, I don't know, it feels like you have more protections. We're supposed to have a constitution
over
here.
The EU does. Yeah, definitely.
And if they could just get into Google and find out where you are.
Yeah, I've thought about this. Scary. I've thought about this many times before. If the intelligence agencies want a Snowden-proof surveillance system, all they need to do is get into Apple, Google, Facebook, Twitter, and or even pay them and, yeah, you know, sign them up for huge, you know, legal NDAs and whatever you might have it. And they can get all the information they need that way.
Yeah.
So
to me, it's concerning, you know. I mean, it's good that it's not going to be used for advertising and all that, but it's still it's
yeah, concerning. And I mean, it's good that Google is stopping it, and I think it shows what Google is as a company. So that's good.
Yes.
The official response from the technical side is in January of this year, we began looking into using Cell ID codes as an additional signal to further and improve the speed and performance of message delivery. There you go. So okay. Was never incorporated into the network sync system, so that data was immediately discarded, and we updated it to no longer request the data. So
that's actually a very good example right there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it also talks about, you know, the idea of what you said, Tanis, tracking people, and that, you know, personal data ranging from political views to their purchase histories to their location are foundational for the successes of companies like Facebook and Alphabet. So,
yeah, and that's what worries me more and more. No matter what side of the political spectrum you're on, you could be vulnerable no matter what.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That worries me.
I think there's lots of people out there who don't realize that that is how you get free Google search and free Facebook, is the fact that you're constantly being data mined and you're being used as an ad point source. So anyways, that's a topic for another show.
Right, yeah. Oh, hey, Shane, can we throw in a real quick footnote to tech news here?
Sure.
Okay, I just wanted to let just everyone, if you've probably already heard about this, but the FCC are moving forward with a vote to end net neutrality. So if you are in America, if you do support it, call your congressman because this is happening, and it's happening soon, within a couple weeks.
Yeah, I was actually going to talk about this when it was closer to the vote, because, you know, there's a whole trove of issues with this. The way it's set up right now isn't optimal, but it works. Just to give you an idea right now, that if the ISPs wanted to become evil under the current circumstance that we have in the US, they could make it worse than what you get without net neutrality, to the point of excessively tiering bandwidth caps. And, you know, the vast majority of TV services out there now are delivered over the internet. Just you don't know it because your cable box abstracts that away. So ISPs could eventually charge you for bandwidth on TV. So there's a huge discussion to be had about this, and whether the current solution is optimal or not.
And remember, like in the U.S., I don't know if Canada's like this or not, but in the U.S., they're not only ISPs, but a lot of them are owned by content creation place.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Hasn't got that bad here yet.
So that's real problem.
Yep, cable companies own movie studios and TV networks and everything. Yes. Comcast, one of the largest cable ISPs in the U.S., owns NBC.
Yeah, see, so you don't need a tinfoil hat to kind of think about where this could go. You know, it could get real bad. So yeah. I just want
the answer. The answer about it, aside from net neutrality, is a massive 21st century digital competition act that effectively breaks up all these monopolies. And yes, that includes the monopolies on social networking like Facebook and Twitter and whatnot. So, but that's why I wanted to delay it for another day, because there's a whole huge discussion about this.
Yes, I just wanted to bring it up.
And I am actually working on an Informer article relating to this.
Oh, awesome. Ooh. Awesome, Shane. Okay, well, I guess I kind of jumped ahead there a little bit, but
yeah,
it's so important that I just want people to know, because the vote's happening soon.
All right. So our skill of the month for November is thieving. We have had a massive lead change this week. So currently the RR man is in first place with 11.1 million XP gained, but not far behind is Flash with 10.8 million XP gained. And in third place is JamAndy52, who hasn't gained any XP since the 6th of the month. And fourth, we have Sunset Fish with 5.8. And in fifth, we have Parnassius with 1.7 million XP gained.
So, why do people live their lives in crime? I mean, a life in crime, it's saddening. I'm just looking at this criminality outside your house. I mean, it's just outside your doorstep. You're getting pickpocketed. You're getting knocked out. You're losing all your stuff. It's just sad looking at this.
Yeah. And the skill of the month for December is Constitution. So if you want to sign up for that, you can. Might be a good time to do that, given the fact there's all these combat pets out. So.
Yeah, Constitution. I remember the time when it was called Hit Points.
Yeah, our system still thinks it is called Hit Points.
It's not Hit Points anymore?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, we actually had to teach a couple of clannies that. Get them through. Like, sit down on a chair. We have to tell you something. Are you aware that it's not called Hit Points anymore? And one of the fun... Okay, I'm not going... I actually skipped that. I was about to tell a joke that I'm not going to tell.
Okay. Well, that takes us nicely into achievements of the week here. So let us begin with achievements starting on the 23rd. Tycho.
Oh, yes. We have Ish with 120 invention on the 23rd of November. Huge congratulations to you. And then we have MS Conan 10 with 99 farming. I was actually there where she got it. Congratulations. Choto with 3,000. And Choto 3,000 with 99 crafting. Apparently he sawed off somebody's hand to get that one.
What?
Don't ask. Yeah, there's actually screen proof of... Or actually, it's claimed in clan chat. Okay, a seafarer with 99 attack on the 22nd of November. Congratulations. Choto 3000 with 99 ranged on the 22nd of November. Rovpita with 99 mining, 21st of November. Oh, here we have one. Shane, you got 99 crafting on the 19th of November.
Reluctantly.
Woo. Yeah, congratulations. Woohoo! And we have a seafarer again with 99 wood cutting on the 19th.
Good job, everyone. Following up from that, we have Quest Lore on November 18th with 99 Slayer. Ropita again has been very busy with 99 defense on the 17th. Continuing on that day, 1, 2, 3, 4, we're cool. 99 Herblar, that's a nice one. Ropita with 99 ranged once again, and we're cool again on the same day with 99 agility. Following up, we have two for Ropita with 99 prayer and 99 summoning also on the 17th. And, Slayer. Slayer. And Takis Fugo with 99 ranged on the 17th.
Nice. And he was not done because Ropita came in with a 99 fishing on the 17th. And then Ray 66 with 99 divination on the 17th. A seafarer was back at it with 99 divination on November 17th. And once again, Ropita with a triple play here of farming, smithing, and divination all on the 17th.
And that's 9 99s. 999.
Wow.
You're telling me no?
Nah.
You're telling me no in German, Tycho?
How do you say yes in German?
Da. See? Oh, no, that's Russian. Sorry.
I actually have no idea.
Anyways, pick of the week, Tycho. Take it away.
Yes. So I'm going to talk about geocaching. It's out there, right outside your door. It exists, but a lot of people don't. And those people that don't know are called muggles. But don't worry, listeners, because I will make you a non-muggle just right away. So what is geocaching? What is the basic structure of it? Well, it's a combination of orientation and treasure hunting. It works like this. All around in the city, in the forest, in the mountains, and even some at the sea, are small boxes that have a pen and a small book where you can write your name. Idea is you go out, for example, into the forest, and you find these small boxes, write your name and date, and then you log them on the internet as found. And so it goes on, and you visit more places that you never have been before. You get some exercise, and you get to know a community that are searching for treasures. But you don't need a spade or anything. It's just going around and searching in bushes and other stuff. And there are different kind of geocaches, which makes it interesting. There are camouflaged geocaches in the city where the muggle rate is quite high and you need to be sneaky about it. And I can tell you, it's never been harder to act like a normal person when you are leaning against a electric box and trying to get up a small piece of paper behind it. It's never been harder trying to act normal. I can promise you that. So that's why majority of us love being out in the forest where nobody sees you and just finding these boxes. Now, what do you gain from this? Well, you gain exercise. You get the enjoyment of real life treasure hunting that's available 24/7. So it's something that normal people host and that's available all year round whenever you want it. Some people take one geocache per day and keep it up. Yeah, we have people here that have been going, taking one geocache per day for 6 years. It's actually a competition who can do the longest. Now, the most common one is what's called traditional geocaches. You go out to a position, find it, and then next. The real fun part begins with the other types of geocaches that I won't go into detail here, but that's multi-caches that, just like a clue scroll, takes you from one place to another until you get to the end. You have a mystery cache where you have to solve a riddle at home, let it be some kind of clue or mathematics. Then you have the Where I Go cache, where you have to download an app and do a virtual adventure before you get to the end. There are different types of geocaches, and they are all out there 24/7 for you to find. And if you're wondering, I have found about 2,300 of them, and some are pretty fun. I have actually even taken a cache that is underwater.
So you went swimming underwater to find one of these.
It wasn't that deep. I put on a life vest. Actually, there's a whole story. For those who are really into geocaching, there's something called First to Find. As soon as a geocache is published, there is a competition who's there first to find it. And you can imagine this rush of people suddenly, a flash mob. In a way, and this day in the summer, it was published in just a couple of meters outside the beach, like 40 meters out in the water. So I took my life jacket and just ran out there and started swimming with it. And soon enough, you see like five other people running to the beach and just jumping in and searching around it and swimming. Took some time, but I found a pot filled with concrete. And by the side of it was a hook that had a waterproof paper and a pen. And lastly, I will just say that, where can you find the coordinates to all of this? Well, geocaching.com. That's where you can find it, or you can download the geocaching application to your mobile.
That's really neat. I mean, I've heard of it, but I didn't know it could be that involved, and I didn't know that many people actually did it. I mean, I'm just looking right now at the website, and it knows my location is as Edmonton, and it says there are 3,600 people or 3,600 geocaches nearby.
Yeah, it's actually I'm very popular, believe me. And every cache has a cache owner that maintains it, that as soon as it goes missing, then the people go, okay, he buys a new flask for it, or depending on the size, and then places it out again.
Neat.
And some of them are just insane.
We call those imagine.
Five Fives. And I mean, I've been searching abandoned houses with UV lights after small clues that says A4 and B2, and walking around my way, finding coordinates, and then swimming, going, I mean, I won't call it sewers, but as close as sewers one can do, and finding skulls with candles in their eyes, and then, I mean, I've been through some amazing adventures.
All right. That sounds really good.
It's not a hardcore thing if you don't want to.
But it could be if you want to, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It can if you want to.
All righty. Sounds good. Geocaching.com. Tanis?
That sounds wonderful. You probably won't catch me doing it because it sounds like a clue scroll. it sounds fun for people to do. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Believe me. Don't get caught by the muggles.
Yeah. One of my fears in life is trying to find something. I hate trying to find stuff. Like, everything I have is in very particular places, because if it ain't, I'll never find it. So.
Yeah. All right, Tanis, what have you been up to this week on RS, aside from Dimension of the Damned, which we already talked about? No Dimension of the Damned here.
No, I have been preparing for a clan competition we have coming up in December. There's some gigantic prizes that are being offered. So
Black Santa hat?
No, not quite that big, but full, like, you know, Scythe and Malevolent sets and Serenic and Nox bows and things like that. It's a total XP kind of competition. So I have been wrecking my brain on how to do that and how to do it on a budget. So that's what I've been doing this week.
All righty. How about you, Tycho? What have you been up to this week? Dimension of the Damned aside.
Yeah. Dimension of the Damned ended up at 74th place, and then getting through a emotional roller coaster, being mad, being sad, and being happy, and then finally, I can guess, kind of satisfied. As I say, Indiana Jones, a fake map, and then at the end, you look at yourself and, okay, I got past all those traps actually, and managed to get myself at a very good spot, and at least I'm now saying, okay, well, that happened, and going on with my life. And going off with my life, I decided I want to go for Hasselmere's Signet Ring.
You're kidding.
Yeah, right? I am not, dude. Shane, I walked around in Runefest as Hasselmere. You think I'm kidding? I actually took a Hasselmere signet ring out of Mod Timbo's ear, and I got a selfie with him for that. I mean, have you ever seen the magic trick where you have a ring hidden in your hand and then you pull it out? Yeah, I did that to Mod Timbo. Oh, the satisfaction. Anyways, I'm actually realizing that I may consider myself lucky, but not myself that lucky to get a Hasselmere signet ring through the normal ways. Believe me, I am a moderator for the Hasselmere signet ring hunt, and I was hunting that thing for 2 months until the coin fell down. It's just a very rare drop. So it cost 1.8 billion of GP, and that's what I'm working on.
Good luck.
Yeah. I have been wearing Luck of the Dwarves 24/7 because of that. Anyway, so that's my current goal, and I'm trying to combine it with 120 Slayer, even though Slayer is too repetitive for adventurer like me, so I've given up on reclaiming my comp cape. So that's what I have been doing.
Okay.
PVM.
As for me, you guys heard I got 99 crafting. That was by way of mining my crystal flasks for herb lore, which I still do quite often. So it just came that way.
I actually asked myself, how in the world did he get 99 crafting? It must be herbal related somehow. I knew it.
Yeah. Aside from that, I got 87 invention. because I have, of course, still been working on that. But that's pretty much all I've been doing this week. Just been a week of arc fishing and the like around RS. Not too much else to report on regarding that. So should be interesting to see where that goes. Slowly but surely getting there. Want that herb, that herb protection piece. I think it's at 96 or 97 or something. Yeah. So. That's what I'm going for
it's
right
tradable,
now.
Tradable, you know. You can always ask me for something.
I know, but I want to be able to make it on my own.
I can help you with that. I just happen to have a lot of living components. Screaming.
No, I'm going to make my own. I need to do that. That's part of my farming suite.
Oh, yes. I'm also playing as a half Iron Man anyway, so yeah, I guess.
Right? That's a pretty fun way to do it, but...
Yeah, until you... try to get Hasselmere signaturing the normal way for X amounts of months.
Well, I believe that finishes us for this week's episode of RSBNB Update. We'll be back next week for what is presumably the Evil Dave quest, assuming that is still on the November release schedule. I don't think there's anything else to say. You guys good?
I'm good.
Yes. Oh, what a roller coaster this has been. But yes, Evil Dave, really looking forward to it. But I'm guessing I will be gone for a really, really long time this time.
I have no idea. Will you say? I have no idea.
No idea. Oh, we're leaving it out there.
We're leaving it a mystery. So, if you guys want to see what we're up to, a little bit of pre-show, a little bit, well, not pre-show, a little bit of production, a little bit of Informer articles, you can find all that on Twitter at RSBNB. Also, if you want to chat with us in-game, we're at Friends Chat Bits Bytes. And if you want to subscribe to the show on iTunes, update.rsbnb.com/iTunes. And we hope you do that. Other subscription options are listed along with full show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And with that being said, we'll see you next week for another episode of RSBNB Update.
Bye-bye.
Evil Dave!